You may be seated. I invite you to reach inside your bulletin for the gospel reading from this morning as we look at Matthew's Easter story, which is by no means easy listening. If you're paying attention, it's heavy metal, or if it's your preference, it's classical thunder. The earthquakes, an angel descends like lightning, a 2-ton stone rocks and then rolls away. It's such an intense scene that the soldiers in the scenario quake in their boots, they faint in fear, they are scared to death. That's why you all know my penchants for titling sermons after classic rock songs. I had a flurry of songs I could have used. From my dad's era, I could have used Shake, Rattle, and Roll, Bill Haley in the Comets. That would have fit. If you're a child from the 70s, I Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet could be the song for all of the people involved here. Or if you're from my era, Thunderstruck by AC/DC really fits at least what's happening to the guards. And it's interesting because the two Marys aren't expecting anything other than to go to the tomb and to grieve. They, if anything, have a sad symphony going on in their ears, a song of sadness. They're coming to mourn. They've experienced great loss. They have had the truth confirmed to them, that cruel truth that the world, no matter how good you are, how matter just you are, no matter how righteous you are, the world will beat you down and toss you out like a rag doll. They've come to pour out their sorrow in peace and quiet. But it's anything but peaceful and quiet with all these terrifying manifestations of divine power. An earthquake that jars the whole place. If you've ever been in an earthquake, there's no stability. You expect at least the ground to be stable. But when nothing is stable and things are collapsing around you, you realize there's no safe place anymore. And then an angel of the Lord descends upon them and a rock is rolled out of place and the angel sits upon it. And all of these are what theologians call theophanies. They are manifestations of divine power. The earthquake is a drum roll signaling God's great power. At Mount Sinai, before the law was given, there was an earthquake upon the mountain. The angel represents God's presence in mediated form, that God has come to offer a message. And the act of sitting on the stone is the angel showing its strength and authority, as if to say, well, that's all. We've got this done, so much for that. Jesus is risen. It is the triumph of God's power over the futile efforts of humankind. Which is interesting, particularly when you consider the guards here in verse 4. These are soldiers. These are military men. And we're never told that they're just two. If you look at any kind of Christian art, you'll find that we tend to always put two guards, but we're never told there are two guards. There could have been a whole group of guards, but what we do know about them for sure is they have the worst assignment in military history. They're there to guard a dead man's tomb. They're there to make sure the dead man doesn't get out and no one comes to take him. It had to be quite a bore. They couldn't have been expecting anything. That's why Matthew can't hold back the joke when he says, you know, at the end of the day, it's the guards who shook and became like dead men. The men who were supposed to be guarding the dead man are now like dead men. And the soldiers faint in fright, reduced to a quivering mass of fear, while the women have the spiritual muscle for it. They're able to endure it because they're at least able to hear a divine voice speak to them through the angels. So as the soldiers fall as if dead, we get a message to the women from the angel in verse 5. And the message is, standard disclaimer from every divine message, do not be afraid. That's always at the top of the list, because if we're encountering God, we ought to fear. That wonderful, horrible, terrible, holy presence. When we're in the presence of the divine, there's an otherworldliness, an eeriness. And so they are in the presence of something they can't explain, something that goes beyond their fathoming. And so the angel has to say, hey, it's okay. Don't be afraid. Very common thing that angels or Jesus has to do with people. Then the angel gives them a second thing. Don't be afraid and do you know Jesus isn't here? You just missed him. You just missed him because he's alive and he's already on his way to Galilee. God has raised him from the dead. So that then the angel says, I have a message for you. I have a task for you, women. This is the task. Go and tell his disciples, that he has been raised from the dead and that he's going ahead of you to Galilee. Why do the ladies have to tell the disciples? Well, guess what the disciples are doing? They're cowards hiding out in Jerusalem, afraid to come to the tomb, afraid they'll be arrested, while these women have made their way bravely, courageously out to the tomb. And because of that courage, they've experienced something that none of the other disciples will, at least in Matthew's account. So they're to go back, say, "Hey, disciples, the story between you and Jesus isn't over. It hasn't ended. It's a new beginning." And so these women leave in verse 8. And I love the expression, they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy. Which is to say, they're fearful because now they go to speak of this reality that defies explanation and through which they'll probably be scorned and mocked. And yet they have great joy. Because they've come to this wonderful discovery that the powers of this world and all it offered against Jesus have been triumphed over. So they go with fear and joy, they run to tell his disciples, and as they're doing this, there's another suddenly in verse 9. Suddenly, Jesus met them just outside the tomb, and he said, "Greetings. Hi." And of course, they had to be quite surprised. Now, what's interesting about that word greetings, it comes from the word kerete, which actually has an emphasis on rejoice. So, you know, it's good to see you. Rejoice. It's a wonderful thing to be here. And the women's response is they came to him and took hold of his feet and worshiped him. It's important that they took hold of his feet because he's not a ghost. He's not a phantom. He's not a hallucination. They are holding the resurrected feet of the risen Lord. And then they worship, and Jesus doesn't reject that worship. And then Jesus just simply repeats what the angels already told them with one difference. In verse 10, then Jesus said, "Don't be afraid," that's the standard disclaimer, "go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me." And you see the difference, I emphasized it. Go and tell not his disciples. Jesus says, "Go and tell my brothers." Which is a way to say, like Joseph did in the Old Testament after he'd been sold into slavery and his disciples were fearful of how he'd respond when he met them again, Jesus says, "They're my brothers. I forgive them. There's no hard feelings. Yeah, they abandoned me. One denied me 3 times. But I come bringing triumph, victory, forgiveness, healing, wholeness." And so he's coming back, and he's coming back to speak to his forgiven and beloved disciples. Now the women are given this task, and every gospel account when it speaks of the resurrection does this, so I have to underscore it. It is always the women who become the apostle to the apostles. It is always the women that become that slender thread between the triumph of Christ's resurrection and actually getting that news to the 12 or the 11 at this point. The women become that very fragile bridge because up to this point in the story, they've been relatively invisible and utterly powerless. And now they're given the unique privilege of being that very narrow bridge through which Christ entrusts the gospel to be presented and proclaimed and brought to the disciples. I always love that about these gospel stories. The women are faithful in their discharge of the duties, and we're the benefactors of that courageous witness. But what we see here is so clear. They are the apostle to the apostles. They are the ones that are courageous enough to be there when the disciples are cowering in fear. How anyone could ever argue that women have no right to preach after they've read the gospels, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand it. If it weren't for their witness, there'd be no witness. It is the courage of those who are invisible and powerless in the story that bring the power of the gospel to the disciples. And so we have a story where the world is just rocked to its core. It's wonderful that the call to worship on that first Easter morning wasn't, "Good morning." It was a terrifying earthquake that ripped a seismic shock through history. Matthew is the most dramatic of the four. This earthquake, a lightning neon angel, stunned guards so that the two Marys who expected a quiet morning get a rock concert. I imagine them going, if I were them, with the song Simon and Garfunkel, "Like a bridge over troubled waters," and then getting there and hearing, "Thunderstruck! Thunderstruck!" their whole perception, and that clipped a bit, but AC/DC ought to clip. They come expecting peace, quiet, loss, failure, disappointment, continued sorrow. But their world's rocked to the core, and it will never be the same. And every gospel wants to challenge us with that same thing. Is our world rocked to the core? You know, there are historic moments that happen in our life together that cause great shifts that can never be removed. Some of you are old enough to remember the day that President Kennedy was assassinated. Where you were, what happened, it was as if a seismic shock went through the world and nothing could ever be the same again. Some of us, in fact most in this room, probably remember 9/11. I remember exactly where I was when I heard about it on the radio at the gas station, seeing people in shock, turning on the news radio, hearing it, going to the church, having people call, prayer groups happening. I remember quite clearly, and as we all know, the world for us changed. It shifted at that moment. I remember the shuttle disaster. I can tell you exactly where I was and what was happening when the shuttle went up and the Challenger. Was it the Challenger that exploded? Those are shifts in history that we experience, public events, where the fault lines in human history shift dramatically and the world's never the same. And that's the reason Matthew is giving the gospel the way he does. He wants us to make no mistake. The point of resurrection is not just that we'll go to heaven when we die. He wants us to see that this is a public event. This is the world being rocked with the earthquake and the stone and the empty tomb and the terrified guards. He cannot allow us to say, oh, this is just a personal event in the lives of the disciples. They're just having this personal moment of inner faith. Don't trouble me with it in a public way, because this is public in the most extreme way. It is God's resurrection power breaking into the world like an atomic bomb, but without the death and destruction, instead with life and healing and hope and forgiveness. It's the reason why the women embrace a body. You know, there's no controversy in saying, well, they saw a ghost. That wasn't a non-controversial thing back in those days. Even today, many of us, if I were to ask you, do you believe in ghosts? Maybe, maybe not. Yes, I do. No, I don't. Because it's not a controversy. But to say in Greco-Roman society, Jesus Christ has risen bodily from the dead was ridiculous to the Greeks and offensive to the Jews. And yet they proclaimed that. And of course, the reason why they proclaimed it publicly is because there's an easy way to disprove it right from the beginning. If you claim Jesus has risen bodily from the dead and you want to disprove it, you go to the tomb and you pull out the corpse. And you say, see, here he is. I don't know what you guys are talking about. Here's the rotting corpse right here. But instead, even the soldiers have to come up with an explanation for why there's no body. And so in the very next passage, they're huddling around. What do? We got to come up with some way to come up with some fake news to make it so that it looks like this didn't really happen, because we can't explain the empty tomb. The point of Matthew making this so public is he will not let us reduce this to the pious, hey, I guess this means I go to heaven when I die. He wants us to see, as his story has unfolded, that this is a dramatic sign of God's victory over all the forces that conspired against Jesus, over the institutional religious dysfunction that led to his crucify, to the institutional political corruption that allowed an innocent man to go to the cross, to the bloodthirsty mob mentality that provoked violence and glories in it to much extent, especially when it's against the enemy. All of those forces have been absorbed by Christ and overcome by Christ, defeated. And Matthew wants us to see this triumph of the resurrection is not just some nice message about life after death. It is God choosing God's king. So though the world reject him, the church reject him, the state rejects him, the crowd reject him, God says, behold my Messiah. Behold the king upon whom I have put my blessing. The one whom I choose. And the wonderful inclusion of the guards represent the power of state. or the power of religion. They are the strong men that are meant to keep Jesus' dead body in the tomb or to keep anyone from provoking deception. And just as the guards cannot guarantee Jesus stays in the tomb in our story, instead they are struck like dead men, so in the same way the powers and principalities of this world cannot stand against the love, the resurrection, the hope, the triumph of the Christ. That's why I called this message A Whole New World. I'm not big for show tunes. I mean, I like them to some extent. I like AC/DC better. I like Shake, Rattle, and Roll better. I even like I Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet better. But this one fits it best because this is the story Matthew is saying. He is saying that somewhere along the walk to the tomb, as the women are singing their sad song and they come to sorrow, they left one world and entered another. Without knowing it, they crossed a border and left a world where might makes right and hopes are dashed and the weak suffer and peace is just an illusion for weaklings. And they entered into a world where everything's turned upside down, where peace is established, where righteousness is exalted. They move into a world that's very much like, unlike our own. And that's why in verse 8 they go back with fear and great joy. The evil powers have been defeated, but they're not yet destroyed. Christ is the first fruits of the resurrection. Their testimony could still get them killed. And yet their testimony as God's Messiah has been vindicated. Christ's reign begins. And they're going to begin to encounter this risen Christ back at home, back at Galilee. As they move back to their old rhythms of life, they can never go back to that old world again. Because they go back to Galilee with the sense that a whole new world has opened before them. For Christ has risen. Christ is risen indeed. They go back with no fear. Four times in our text we read about fear. One of those fears knocks the soldiers over. Twice the women are told by an angel and Jesus, do not fear. And the reason is, as Paul will put it, neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor authorities, nor anything present, nor anything future, nor anything to come, nothing can separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord, because He is Lord and He is risen. And we go back to a world where the power of resurrection is loosed, and it's more powerful than the power of Caesar. It's why we don't say Caesar is Lord. We say Christ is Lord. It's more powerful than the power of sin and death. That's why we dare not lose hope no matter how bad things get. Because as Fred Buchner says, resurrection means the worst thing is never the last thing. Resurrection means the worst thing's the never the last thing. Or as that great hymn says, because He lives, I can face tomorrow. Because He lives, I can be a person of hope. So in the tombs of our life and at our own tomb, no matter where we are, Jesus will eventually greet us, and He greets us with that wonderful greeting in verse 9. Hi. Greetings. Rejoice. It's the reason why every Sunday is really a resurrection Sunday. Every Sunday we come, we regain our hope, and we go out as people of hope because He is risen and He is Lord and He has triumphed. And because He is risen, risen indeed, we go back into the world as witnesses of hope. Has Shake, Rattle, and Roll rocked your life? Have you felt the earth move under your feet? Or do you stand thunderstruck like the guards? Or better, will you lean into God's whole new world? May that be the path we choose. Would you pray with me very quickly?